Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday morning, August the 20th. And we will welcome your reaction this hour to yesterday's Democratic presidential candidate debate in Iowa. Presented as a special edition of This Week with George Stephanopoulos, Sunday morning on ABC. Did you catch any of this? Did you see or hear or read about what happened at the debate? We will welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. The candidates debated issues like experience, especially whether Senator Barack Obama had enough of it to be president. What do you think? And they also debated electability, especially whether Hillary Clinton is electable or is she too polarizing to be elected president in a general election. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And you know, maybe we'll debate whether there are too many debates. Apparently, Senator Obama thinks there are, and over the weekend said that he's going to limit his appearances in more debates. Is that a good idea? Anyway, we will welcome your thoughts and questions about yesterday's Democratic presidential candidate debate, and we'll open this up to other news from the presidential campaign trail in general, so we can talk about what's happening on the other side of the aisle as well. Our guest is Dennis Goldford, who is professor of politics and the director of the program in Law, Politics, and Society at Drake University. He is author of the book, The American Constitution and the Debate Over Originalism, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
You were at this debate yesterday.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, what did you think of it?
Oh, I don't know if I have debate fatigue at this point the way Senator Obama does, but certainly I think this format is both exhausted and exhausting.
Yeah, why do you say that?
Well, it's exhausted in that they've used it to death. It really is. I mean, yesterday, for example, was George Stephanopoulos just throwing firecrackers into the chicken coop. It was an attempt to stir things up, but it's so complicated, and people work in such short spans of time that you almost need a computer program to keep track of who said what about what. And for somebody viewing that, I can't see how that could be very enlightening, actually.
Yeah, he started the debate, and I thought it was a little bit odd, starting the debate with the latest poll numbers. Do you think that that was wise or not?
Well, does it make a huge difference in the grand scheme of things? No, but we always have to remember that polls are a particular snapshot at a particular time, and times change. I mean, 4 years ago at this point in 2003, in that long lead up to caucuses, Howard Dean had a lock on the nomination. And even as late as December of 2003, so 4 years in 4 months ago, so to speak, or at that point, John Kerry's campaign was all but dead. So to talk in terms of who's leading and who's behind right now, unless you're really at the bottom of the second tier, doesn't mean a lot.
Yeah. The very first question, for the most part, I'm not going to be able to say it exactly, but the first question was whether or not Barack Obama had enough experience to be president. Talk about that some.
Well, again, he's in his first term in the Senate, and people in 2003 and 2004, for example, thought that John Edwards, who was finishing his first term, wasn't very experienced. He was in the sixth year of his term, basically, in 2004, his one term. People thought he wasn't very experienced. And Barack Obama, this time around, makes Edwards look like Strom Thurmond in terms of longevity in the Senate, because Obama really isn't that far advanced in his first term. So people are wondering about his experience. And then the couple of things he said with regard to nuclear weapons and Pakistan and things like that, have given his opponents an opening to suggest that he's not seasoned enough to make appropriate foreign policy distinctions. His argument is, of course, that experience is important, but he repeated the idea that we've heard before, that Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld have given experience a bad name. But you also, as he does say, you also have to have good judgment. So you need good judgment and good experience.
Yeah. And I thought Bill Richardson had kind of a funny line when he said we're debating experience and electability, and I have both.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now he keeps saying that he's been on the air here in Central Iowa, at least on television, with ads about as much as anybody. Obama's been on quite a bit. The others really haven't been on very much at all. But you have to ask, with regard to Richardson, as attractive as a candidate he may be in terms of his resume, he's still sort of a distant fourth in those imperfect polls right now. So you might ask how much bang he's getting for his advertising buck.
Yeah. So besides this format maybe being exhausting and exhausted, did anything new come from the debate yesterday? Did we hear anything new?
Well, there was a more explicit focus on the question of the kind of baggage that Hillary Clinton carries. She has been a polarizing figure. Now, she was very clever in that, if jujitsu, and I'm no expert here, if jujitsu is a matter of sort of turning your strength into your weakness into a strength, she, of course, took that question about how she has these negatives, and she turned it around by claiming it as a badge of pride, as a mark of her success in irritating her opponents. But she does have that electability question. There's no doubt that certainly in Iowa, at least if not nationwide, a lot of Democrats would like to see her as president. They're a little less sure about seeing her as a nominee because, frankly, at least at this point, if she were to get the nomination, it's not implausible to suggest that she'd start off 170 electoral votes in the hole. In other words, if she were the nominee, there goes the South. Now, maybe they can, and that doesn't even count Utah, Wyoming, Idaho, places like that. Now, maybe her folks, her strategists, think she can flip Virginia and Florida, and that would really change the dynamic. But that aside, if she started 170 electoral votes in the hole, she would have to win 75% of all remaining electoral votes in the country, and that's a pretty stiff order.
Mm-hmm. Did anyone make a big flub or a gaffe?
Oh, the best way to put it, I think, is no gaffes, no gains.
Let's take some calls. Lauren in Marathon is first. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. This is Lawrence.
I'm sorry, Lawrence. Go ahead.
I've been following the debates, and I just have a few comments. The only experience I'm interested in is who is experienced in not taking money from lobbyists representing corporate America. And certainly a lot of the people who are already there embedded in Washington, they don't have that experience. Senator Clinton may be the front runner, but she's got her own agenda, and it's very disingenuous as far as I'm concerned. She doesn't really answer any questions. Like you say, she turns it around to what she wishes to discuss. Governor Richardson seems to be pretty upfront and pretty honest, and he does say that he will end the war when he becomes president. And outside of Mr. Kucinich, those two are the only ones who will commit to that come hell or high water. The other ones talk a good game, but you can tell that they're going to stay there in Iraq for a considerable amount of time. I forget the other gentleman's name. I haven't seen him before, but it was quite interesting when they asked about the position on God and praying. He didn't get much of an applause. I know that 95% of the people in this country believe in God, but I wish somebody would have said, well, look, you know, that question's neither here nor there. It's up to you and me to save this planet, to save this country, and to take care of the citizens in our country. It's not up to some force in the universe that we think might exist.
Yeah.
We have to be concrete about this issue.
Yeah. All right. That's
my take on the
There's a lot there to talk about, and I need to take a short pause, and then I'll have our guest respond to your observations, Lawrence, after this break. And we'll welcome your observations from yesterday's debate, the Democratic presidential candidates debate, debated in Iowa yesterday. Did you see it? What did you think about it? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We're talking about whether we learned anything new. And we welcome your questions for our guest, Dennis Goldford, who is a professor of politics at Drake University and author of The American Constitution and the Debate Over Originalism. He's also a co-author of a book on the Iowa caucuses due out in a year. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll join Ben Marins. He's with you between 4 and 6 this afternoon for At Issue with Ben Marins. After 5 o'clock, American employers are looking at health plans that reward healthy workers and would force unhealthy workers or workers with unhealthy habits to pay higher premiums. How fair is that? Ben and his guests talk about that after 5 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking about the latest presidential candidate debate, the Democrats getting together in Iowa yesterday. Dennis Goldford, our guest, was there. He is a professor of politics at Drake University, and he'll answer your questions and respond to your views about this at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We heard from a caller just before the break, who had a number of things to say, including that he wants to know who has the less experience getting money from lobbyists. You want to address that, Professor Goldford?
Well, there are two particular things I want to respond to, but on the lobbyist issue, I mean, part of the issue is that is simply a way of life in Washington, and it's a question in a way of unilateral disarmament, whether you want a candidate just to forego any kind of contact there. You might suggest that in a perfect world we wouldn't have a situation like that, but others would argue it's certainly not a perfect world, and it's just the facts of life. But let me respond to two other things. One, quickly, the debate format, again, in that kind of situation is such that candidates have become very skilled at coming in knowing what they want to say, and they're going to say it no matter what the question is, no matter what the direction of the questioning becomes. So that's one of the unsatisfactory aspects of that. But with regard to the war, I think the next president, as of noon Eastern time, January 20th of 2009, the next president, Republican as well as Democrat, is going to be devoted to getting us out of Iraq. There's no question about that, because nobody outside of a few true believers in the administration and the pages of the Weekly Standard political journal want us still to be there. But the difficulty for the Democrats is, first and foremost, the threshold question for any viable Democratic candidacy is, can the people of the country trust the Democrats to keep the country safe in a dangerous world? And if Democrats can't answer that question to the satisfaction of the voters, nobody's going to listen to Democrats with regard to what they say about health care and education and things like that. And Republicans, of course, ever since Vietnam, have been arguing that the Democrats cannot be trusted to keep the country safe. So the Democrats are engaged in trying to figure out how they deal with that issue, and we saw some of the different sides of that in the debate.
Yeah. Do you recall the question about God and the response from the candidate that our caller hadn't heard of before?
I'm trying to think if he was responding to or thinking of Mike Gravel, the sort of gadfly candidate who was a former senator from Alaska. I don't recall specifically what the caller was referring to.
Next, we go to Mike in Milwaukee. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about this whole format in general, because it seems to measure how quickly a candidate can think on their feet. But yet, I would think that most of us would want a president who employs a more deliberative process. You know, we really don't want him making snap judgments on really important issues. We want him to kind of think about it, to think through the ramifications. So what exactly would these debates tell us about, you know, how well these candidates think through things?
Well, again, that's the problem with this format. It's like the lightning round of a game show mm-hmm. rather than anything really substantive. If you've ever seen, and I don't think it's done anymore, but Brian Lamb on C-SPAN, who would sit with somebody who's written a book, whether it's book talk or book notes or whatever, and just really, in a leisurely way, get to talk about what that person's argument was or what the book was about, and really get a chance to go back and bore in on some of the things the author said and raise questions about it. I mean, that's obviously a more in-depth kind of treatment of somebody's book or somebody's ideas. The problem is that it doesn't make for great television, at least on the commercial networks. Television thrives on conflict and nothing lasting very long at all. This is where radio such as Wisconsin Public Radio and other public stations and some other limited number of venues offer us more of a chance for in-depth treatment. But remember, television news is much more television than it is news.
Yeah. When you have 8 or 9 candidates, though, it's also pretty hard to get in depth. Are you saying just have individual interviews with all the candidates and not have all the candidates up on a stage together so we can compare and contrast?
Well, but, you know, how much comparison and contrast can we get in these lightning round game shows we have?
Should we limit the number of candidates considered legitimate or valid candidates?
That's always really difficult mm-hmm. for broadcasters because, on the one hand, if broadcasters say, well, you don't really do well in the polls, so we're not going to cover you, the candidates come back and say, well, it's because you're not covering us that we're not doing well in the polls.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a difficult position broadcasters in. I mean, nobody seriously considers, if he weren't in jail, keeping Lyndon LaRouche, for example, who's a perennial candidate in these contests. So it's a difficult situation. But even if you took 3 or 4 of the candidates, or even 2, an issue would arise about who gets paired with whom.
Right. And John Edwards made some headlines a few weeks ago when he was caught whispering to Hillary Clinton that maybe we needed to split up the candidates so we didn't have 8 or 9 candidates on stage at once. And, yeah, that's he got a little bit of flack for that.
That's right. Mm. But, of course, he wants sort of more one-on-one time, I think, with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. I mean, as it is, if you're the front runner, if as I said, the debate had no gaffes, no gains, then it sort of, for the moment, maintains the order of popularity or support that the particular candidates have.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were one of the top 3 and really wanted to go after my major opponents, I wouldn't want the distraction of people I consider minor opponents.
Yeah, and then those lesser-known candidates or the candidates that aren't doing well in the polls also don't get as many questions directed to them in debates like this. We heard Dennis Kucinich yesterday complaining that, I thought you would never get to me. He finally was asked a question after, 45 minutes.
Right, and ironically, he was at the same stage position, the same podium, that 2 weeks ago Tom Tancredo was at. And it took at least 20 minutes, or I think I measured 22 to 25 minutes, before Stephanopoulos actually went to Tancredo. And I thought Tancredo was about to go over that podium and go after Stephanopoulos for not asking him questions. So they were maybe that far podium position was where was the exile for people who aren't very high in the polls.
A lot of commentators, pundits have said that Hillary Clinton is an excellent debater. This is her, these are her forms, and that she's pretty much won all of these debates. Do you go along with that or not?
Well, you raise a very interesting point. On the one hand, I think that Hillary Clinton has become very self-assured, very confident, and very comfortable in this particular format. Not the least because everybody can beat up on everybody else and she can just sort of sit there above it all. But she has become much better as a speaker in these situations compared with the ways I've seen her previously. By contrast, I think that somebody like Barack Obama doesn't do as well in this kind of format because his style of speaking doesn't lend itself to this very well. He likes to speak in broader, more rhetorical, more aspirational, inspirational tones. That's been, people like that on the one hand. On the other hand, a lot of people say, well, the music's great, but where are the lyrics? In other words, they wonder how much substance there is there. But his kind of speaking that really just moves people in the way that Ronald Reagan could do or even Bill Clinton could do, It doesn't lend itself to this kind of close hand-to-hand combat.
So is that why, do you think, Barack Obama says now that he's going to only participate in the five remaining debates sanctioned by the Democratic National Committee, two December debates in Iowa, and a September 9th debate in Miami?
I think that's it's a move not without risk, but I think it's a smart move, because particularly if he can say, this is what I'm doing with the time that I would have been spending dealing with these, if he can point to some substantive efforts on behalf of his campaign instead of those, he doesn't have to worry about free media. I mean, the candidates much lower in the polls need all the free media they can get. He's going to get covered anyway because he's so new and different.
Judy in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Judy.
Yes. Yesterday when I voted on the WABC poll, Barack Obama was way ahead. I don't know how it ended up later on, but he was way ahead of all of the other candidates. I also find that because I listened to him read his book, The Audacity of Hope, on CDs, that I can fill in the complexity of his thinking. When he gives an answer, I have a broader sense of all of the complex thinking that went into it. And I wonder if other people have that same sense who haven't read his book?
That's a very good point. I think you have that context and background to fill in the blanks, obviously, if you say, as you've said, so to speak. But for somebody who has not read these other materials of his, again, it sounds great, but as I've heard one Democratic activist, a woman, say, you know, she was inclined to support him, but the more she hears him in these contexts, she wonders if there's really a there. And that's a devastating critique.
Yeah. Are you familiar with this ABC website poll on who won or who didn't win the debate in Iowa?
I haven't seen that, and partly because I haven't had the chance, partly because I just don't trust those things. You know, it's just a matter of whoever chooses to participate in that, and I don't know if they can regulate people doing it more than once or not. So,
yeah, right.
Very
yeah.
skeptical of that.
Very unscientific. But Barack Obama, again, very unscientific. It seems to me, and it just, again, my perception, that he might have received the most thunderous applause for his various one-liners, like when he said he prepared for the debate by going on the bumper cars
right.
At the Iowa State
right.
Fair.
But you see, that's partly the problem with the format. What gets privileged? It's the one-liners. I mean, Kucinich, of course, brought down the house with his statement about, you know, praying to God that George would call on me. So. But does that mean anything in the grand scheme of the campaign? No.
Oh, that's the candidate that our caller before was thinking about. It wasn't that wasn't necessarily a question about that, mm-hmm. but that Dennis Kucinich's response to that. Well, let's find out what our listeners thought about the debate format. Whether or not you heard or learned anything new yesterday, whether you have any response to Barack Obama saying he's now going to limit his appearances in these types of debates. Much of the debate yesterday seemed to focus on whether or not Barack Obama was experienced enough to be president. Do you have any thoughts on that question yourself? Or whether Hillary Clinton was too polarizing to be elected? Do you have any thoughts on that? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking about yesterday's Democratic presidential candidate debate in Iowa, which was presented as a special edition of This Week with George Stephanopoulos. We are talking with Dennis Goldford, who is a professor of politics at Drake University. He was at the debate, as was NPR's Scott Horsley, who filed this report for yesterday's All Things Considered.
Hillary Clinton barely had time to say good morning before she was asked to weigh in on rival Barack Obama's foreign policy experience, or lack of it. Clinton had earlier told an Iowa newspaper Obama was naive and irresponsible for saying he would meet with leaders of Iran, Syria, and North Korea.
I think the next president will face some of the most difficult international dangers, threats, and challenges that any president has faced in a very long time. When you've got that big an agenda facing you, you should not telegraph to our adversaries that you're willing to meet with them without preconditions during the first year in office.
Other candidates were also asked if the first-term Illinois senator is ready to be president, prompting Obama to joke he'd prepared for the debate by riding the bumper cars at the Iowa State Fair. Obama quickly turned the tables on Clinton, though, suggesting she's part of what he called the failed politics of Washington.
We're going to need somebody who can break out of the political patterns that we've been in over the last 20 years. And I think that's going to require building a new majority, getting new people involved in the process, and I wouldn't be running if I didn't believe that I was the person best equipped to do that.
Several candidates were asked if Clinton could win a general election, given the strong negative attitude some voters have towards her. The question of electability is still nagging some undecided voters in Iowa, like Marianne Gregory, who watched six of the candidates during a forum last night in Cedar Rapids.
I want a Democratic candidate that can win. That's what's most important. I think I know who I want, but it's got to be somebody who's going to win. It's important we get a Democrat in office.
Former North Carolina Senator John Edwards says in order to win next year, Democrats have to be seen as a party of change, not the status quo. He's repeatedly challenged Clinton and other rivals to stop taking campaign contributions from lobbyists.
I don't believe you can change this country without taking on very entrenched interests in Washington, including lobbyists that stand between us and the change that America needs. And I don't believe you can do it by sitting at a table, negotiating with them, and trying to bring them together.
Obama, away! Obama, away!
Debates like this one always attract some sign-waving enthusiasts, but it's not clear how much they speak for or affect ordinary voters. Democrats have already held more than two dozen debates and joint appearances, including three in Iowa this week alone. The Obama campaign said yesterday the Illinois senator plans to limit himself to just eight more debates this year so he can spend more time meeting directly with voters in early balloting states. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Des Moines, Iowa.
1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890 for your questions about yesterday's Democratic presidential candidate debate in Iowa or other issues from the presidential campaign trail. Scott in Green Bay is with us next. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
Good morning. I think Obama fared well in the debate. And my point is, I don't think experience should be the issue that they talk about, because if you really look at the three leading Democrat candidates, experience is lacking in all three of them. You've got a first-term senator, you've got a one-term senator, and then you've got Hillary Clinton, who's in her second term. So there's not a lot of experience, political experience, except maybe being the first lady, if you're going to use that as a defining marker. I mean, because if you take it the Republican candidates with Giuliani, Romney, and McCain, I mean, experience is something you just want to be discussing, because they'll get blown away in the experience debate.
No, you want to react to that, Professor Goldford?
Sure. Two things. Number one, with the three leading Democratic candidates for the moment, all being or having been in the Senate, we one thing we might remember is we haven't had a sitting senator elected to the presidency since JFK in 1960. Senators haven't fared well as presidential nominees. Second, of the three leading candidates, I might characterize what they're doing this way. Edwards is running from the left. He's the Howard Dean candidate of this year. Clinton's trying to run from the center, and in a way, Obama's trying to run from above. And by that, I mean he's trying to run against politics as usual. The danger for him in that is the last person who tried to do that was President Bill Bradley.
And he didn't do too well.
Right.
Yeah. What about the Democrats, at least the front runners, according to Scott, have very little experience compared to the Republican candidates?
Well, again, they certainly have had more experience dealing with national affairs than Giuliani and Romney have had. Fred Thompson had, a term or so in the Senate. He hasn't been there for quite a while. So in terms of dealing with national affairs, they have much more experience. Certainly they have more experience than any governor had before coming to the presidency. So it all depends upon how you evaluate that. But they have less executive experience than a governor would.
Andy in Madison is with us now. Hi, Andy.
Hi, good morning. Well, I was wondering why it seems to me that there's a lot of speculation that Hillary Clinton is just the automatic front runner and that this is all a big show until she's nominated. And I'm just wondering why this occurrence is happening.
Partly because, you have in her case the first serious female candidate for a presidential nomination. So there's extra interest in that regard. Your point is very well taken. You can't just assume that she's an automatic shoe-in for this. At the same time, as I said, she has a huge number of Democrats who really want her to be president. Her problem is, as I said before, that some are worried about her as a nominee, how successful she might be in a year when Democrats think they've got their best shot at the White House in ages, and they don't want to throw away that chance with a flawed nominee.
We're talking with Dennis Goldford. He is a professor of politics at Drake University in Iowa. He was at the Democratic presidential candidate debate in Iowa yesterday. And he's talking with us about what was said and what wasn't and whether we learned anything new and about the presidential campaign and presidential politics in general. Did you catch the debate yesterday? What did you think? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up, Jim Packard in for Kathleen Dunn after 9 o'clock, talking with his guest about all things political every Monday in the 9 o'clock hour. Kathleen and her guest will recap the major news from the week before, and that's what Jim will do after 9 o'clock. He'll be talking with a professor of political science at Iowa State University, too, so I bet you they'll talk some about yesterday's debate as well. That's what we're focusing in on this hour, the Democratic presidential debate yesterday in Iowa that was presented as a special edition of This Week with George Stephanopoulos. It was on yesterday morning on ABC. The candidates debated issues like experience and electability, among other things. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Here's Senator Hillary Clinton discussing whether or not Barack Obama was or is has enough experience.
I think the next president will face some of the most difficult international dangers, threats, and challenges that any president has faced in a very long time. When you've got that big an agenda facing you, you should not telegraph to our adversaries that you're willing to meet with them without preconditions during the first year in office.
And that's an issue that came up in one of the first debates, whether Barack Obama, that was the YouTube debate, wasn't it, Professor Goldford, where Barack Obama said he would meet with these dictators.
I think it was.
Yeah. And is that a big deal? Is that a big issue in this campaign?
Well, the issue in and of itself is not that major an issue. But what it symbolizes is, again, it's the question of whether, in fact, Barack Obama is politically mature enough at this point, experienced enough to deal with adversaries and enemies around the world. So it's being used to question his experience and capability of dealing with national security issues. And when Republicans go after him for that or talking about sending troops to Pakistan, it's a way for Republicans to go after not just Obama, but again, the Democrats as the party you cannot trust to protect national security.
Yeah. Barack Obama, though, has stood by those comments, hasn't he?
Well, he's got to. He sort of got himself in a situation in which he sort of crawled out on a limb, but he can't back up because that backing off of that would possibly do more to undermine his campaign than trying to stick with it in a way that explains it to people's satisfaction. In that, it's sort of similar to Hillary Clinton's refusal to say, I was wrong to vote for the authorization for the Iraq War. We've seen how she's resisted that in a way that John Edwards just said, mea culpa, I was wrong, I made a mistake.
Yeah. Well, here's Barack Obama from yesterday's debate, I guess responding to the claims that he doesn't have enough experience to be president.
We're going to need somebody who can break out of the political patterns that we've been in over the last 20 years. And I think that's going to require building a new majority, getting new people involved in the process. And I wouldn't be running if I didn't believe that I was the person best equipped to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Professor Goldford, comments on that?
That's, again, what I've suggested, mm-hmm. that he's taking the approach, and you get this quite often from one aspect of the Democratic Party, which is that you've got to reinvent or at least seriously alter the political process, get all sorts of new people involved. That's all well and good, but there are an awful lot of people who are already involved, and unless you deal with their concerns and their issues, you're not going to get very far.
It almost seemed, by watching this yesterday, that this is going to be a race, or is a race, just between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama.
Certainly, they're the best-funded candidates on the Democratic side. I think that John Edwards increasingly has an Iowa-centric or Iowa-centered strategy. I don't see how he can get very far if he doesn't finish first in Iowa, because he has about half the money on hand that Obama and Clinton do. The usual rule of thumb is that there are only three tickets out of Iowa in terms of the caucuses, first, second, and third. If you don't score in that group, you're basically through as a viable nominee. I think Clinton and Obama could survive a second or third place finish in Iowa. I'm not sure that Edwards could.
Yeah, but Edwards is doing well in Iowa.
Not as well as he was. He's mm-hmm. had a bad spring. He's had a tough early summer. People are increasingly seeing him as angry, and voters tend not to, unless you're a single-issue candidate, voters tend not to feel comfortable with angry candidates. And recent polls suggest that they've basically fallen into a dead heat.
Ravi in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, my name is Dr. Ravi. I'm out of St. Luke's here. I feel strongly that Mrs. Clinton has done very well on all her speeches and debates, and I think she comes out as a very strong candidate. And you can see in England, for example, Margaret Thatcher, and before that Queen Elizabeth, and in India also, Indira Gandhi, Prime Minister, she was ruling the country pretty well. And I think she will be a strong candidate to come up and should win the presidency, and she will be an effective president for our country. That's how I look at her from the debate that I saw yesterday. Do you agree with me?
Well, that would be my taking a position there, and I don't do that. But what you just said is exactly the message that the Clinton campaign wants to portray to the country. That's exactly what they want to portray her as, another perhaps a liberal or democratic Margaret Thatcher. That's exactly the image they want the country to adopt.
You know, and while Dr. Ravi likes Hillary Clinton very much, much is made of her high negatives when polling is done, and that came up in yesterday's debate. Why is she... is she perceived negatively because she's a Clinton or because she's a woman, or do we know?
I don't think it's because she's a woman. I think it's because she's Hillary Clinton. I mean, she's been on the national stage for 15 years, roughly. She, of course, has to deal with a segment of the country, particularly conservative Republicans, especially white males in the South, who just have this obsessive, almost paranoid hatred of anything Clinton. And they've seen her as Lady Macbeth or the power behind the throne, and they've been obsessing about her for a good 15 years. Her introduction to the national stage, you recall, was her argument, or Bill's argument, that, you know, you elect you two for the price of one. And her argument was she wasn't a stand-by-your-man kind of woman.
Mm-hmm.
That rankled a lot of people way back then, 15 years ago. This is one reason, although it's particularly Hillary, I've always thought, and she may prove me wrong, that actually the first female president would be more likely to be a Republican, because any Democratic president, especially somebody like Hillary Clinton, any Democratic nominee, would be tarred by Republicans and conservatives as a radical feminist. And so she will have to deal with that particular issue.
Yeah, well, she did say in response to a question that she has spent the past many, many years I don't know, a decade or more, being smeared by the Republican spin machine. So that's when she was using her high negatives as a badge of honor, as you said
earlier. Exactly. And that's also her claim to a certain kind of experience that Obama and Edwards don't have. Yes, she was first lady, but she makes the claim, of course, that she visited, 85 different countries and has dealt in some way with foreign policy matters on behalf of President Clinton. So in that sense, she wants to claim she's not just a senator in the ordinary sense of being a senator. She does have some sense of executive experience.
We are talking about the Democratic presidential candidate debate in Iowa yesterday. Wondering if you have any reactions to what was said or any observations from yesterday's debate. And any questions you have about the presidential race in general, especially when it comes to Iowa, as we're talking with a political science professor from Drake University, Dennis Goldford, who was at the debate yesterday. He was also at the debate when the Republicans were hosted by This Week a couple of weeks ago. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Our guest says that all of these debates are getting a little bit exhausting, and maybe the format is exhausted. We wonder what you think and whether you are getting anything out of all of these debates or not. Maybe you've already made up your mind and you don't need to see all of these debates. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Willie in Madison joins us next. Hi, you're on the air.
First, just what about Mike Gravel? Was he not allowed in this as the media finally succeeded in burying his candidacy because he's...
Well, he was there.
He was there, okay. But I really want to ask about Hillary Clinton. Or state at least what I think. I don't much like her for political reasons, but it seems to me the campaign, this relentless, vicious, hateful campaign against her that's been going on since shortly before her husband became president, everywhere, on every last section of hate radio, even the relatively sort of the talk radio jockeys that are commonly derided as being liberals, they all, like the ones we have in Madison, they hate Hillary Clinton too. And I think in such a male media, you know, they're listening to themselves and they fail to realize that, you know, I think most American women are used to men who have some sort of deep animus toward women, and this causes women, I think, in a lot of cases, perhaps to identify somewhat with Hillary Clinton. I believe she polls much better amongst women, and, you know, they sort of, in the mainstream media, being, you know, viciously right-wing in most of its outlook at things, of things, as far as I can see, you know, doesn't like Hillary Clinton and listens to all of the males that have a terrible problem with her and listen in the whole echo chamber.
Yeah, what's your analysis of that, Professor Goldford?
That's a tough one. That was sort of a triple backflip political analysis. but I think that you have to remember that Hillary Clinton, until recently, was doing relatively, I won't say poorly, but she wasn't doing very well with Democratic women. And she's recently begun to improve her standing among them, but especially professional Democratic women had their doubts about her. Now, part of it was the electability issue. Part of it may have been political positions. But remember, if she's trying to run from the center, she's certainly going to be attacked from the more liberal wing. I hate to use the term left because it's not accurate, even though we hear it a lot. The more liberal wing of the Democratic Party. I mean, each political party has its fights between purists and pragmatists. And she certainly tried to position herself, ever since she got to the Senate, as more centrist and more pragmatic. She got herself on the Armed Services Committee. She supposedly, by all reports, has some good relationships with a number of people in the Pentagon and in the military. But there's always this purist wing of the party. Republicans have had the same thing on their side as well, just in the other direction. You know, the purists want to say, you know, you've got to be holier than anybody else. And you know, even Ronald Reagan once said about purists in his party, anybody who's with me 80% of the time is not my enemy. But the purist view is if you're not with me 100% of the time, you are my enemy. So she's irritated a number of the more liberal people in the Democratic Party precisely for trying to be, successfully or not, we don't know, more pragmatic and more centrist.
Thanks, Willie, for the call. Mike Revelle was there. Did he say anything noteworthy?
Well, you know, I certainly don't want to disparage anybody running for president because it's tough, it's arduous, it's an awful process. But in some ways, Gravel, you know, he almost functions in the Democratic side, as does Kucinich in a way, the way Alan Keyes did on the Republican side in 96 and 2000. You take such positions out of the mainstream of the party that you make everybody else look moderate. Gravel was good for a couple of laughs at the debate yesterday. He certainly knows he's not going anywhere. But he does articulate a point of view that some Democrats very much like, although they don't like enough to give him any real support, according to polls.
Yeah, well, Gravel didn't score anything in that online poll that a listener brought up a little while ago. I just had Leo, my producer, check into it. Kucinich actually won that online poll. So what does that tell you?
It tells us more about the poll than it does about Kucinich.
Yeah, followed by Obama, then Clinton, then Biden, then Edwards.
Yeah.
Sally in Middleton. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. You summed up Hillary's people's negatives very, very well, but everybody leaves out the most salient point about her that that irritates me. Although I like her, I'd be delighted if she were. I don't know if I'll vote for her or not, but anyway, I think she's great. But yesterday, when she was showed exactly, everybody else looked very earnest up there. They showed her listening to somebody else with her perennial self-satisfied, smug look on her face, chin up like she was above them all, looking down, and it's that affect that irritates the Democrats and Republicans. I wish I could advise her, say, Hillary, just look people in the eye, you know, get that smile off your face and look normal.
Well, Professor Goldford?
Well, smug to some people, of course, is self-confident to others, so it's a question about the eye of the beholder. I will note that when the candidates were brought into the auditorium at Drake University, all the men candidates came in, and for some reason, she wasn't there yet. And they all stood there and had their photo op, and then she finally came in. Now, I don't know, and she referred to being glad to be there when she woke up. I don't know if she was late or if there was a Secret Service issue. But she certainly had the opportunity to make a grand queenly entrance.
Yeah, well, they all sounded kind of groggy, too. It was maybe too early for a presidential candidate. I'm not sure. We'll leave it there. We're out of time. Thanks a lot for being with us.
It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, Dennis Goldford is a professor of politics at Drake University. He was at yesterday's presidential candidate debate in Des Moines. He is also the author of The American Constitution and the Debate Over Originalism. Thanks to Karen Prager and Leo Duran for producing this hour. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.